Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. We're just a couple of weeks from the inauguration of a new president, and one hopes a brighter new year than the one that just ended. But there seems little doubt that we remain a politically divided nation. And perhaps nowhere is this reality on sharper display than here in North Carolina, a place Western Carolina University political science professor Chris Cooper and others have described as the bluest red state in the country. Recently, I caught up with Cooper at his office in Cullowhee to discuss the political year that was and the one to come, the hard turn to the right that the Republican Party has made under Donald Trump, and whether North Carolina is likely to remain a deeply purple state for the foreseeable future.
Well, Chris Cooper, welcome back to News and Views. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too. It's great to talk to you.
A remarkable 2020 in so many ways. Obviously, it's hard to separate the politics and political debates and developments from the pandemic. The pandemic seemed to be the elephant in the room in so many regards and sort of both exposed and maybe exacerbated some of the political divides in our country and our state. Are we really as divided as it seems?
You know, I wish the answer were no. I wish I would give this optimistic view and say that people are overplaying it and that really we're all going to sing kumbaya and agree on these deep issues for the state. But I don't think that's true, unfortunately. I believe that we are really that divided. A whole bunch of political scientists and some psychologists got together, and they wrote this big paper like academics do, and they said that the country is so divided, they came up with another word. Instead of calling it polarization, they started calling it sectarianism.
Wow.
And so I think when we're creating new language to describe a new reality, that really does show kind of how bad it's gotten.
I wonder, though, sometimes if it's that divided. Some issues, some substantive issues like the economy and government involvement in the economy, perhaps tax policy, it actually doesn't seem that we're that divided. It's not as if we've got on one side, you know, the Communist Party and on the other side, people who, you know, favor the complete elimination of government. But is it more of a social divide? Is it more of a cultural divide? Or is it a policy divide? And I'm maybe just missing something here.
I think it's all of the above. And I don't think you're missing anything. I mean, clearly we need to remember that this is all within this larger, you know, basically a capitalist framework and a democratic small d framework. So I think you're right. We need to remember that globally and over the kind of course of history, of course, we're not that far apart. But I think we are pretty far apart on policy issues, and I think it's also become divisive. We are now polarized on cultural lines, as you noted, as well as political lines, right? I mean, it's about the places we live. It's about the social media that we consume. It's about the cars that we drive. I sort of jokingly tell my students to find me a Republican who drives a Subaru, and I'll give extra credit, right? Nobody's ever taken me up on it. I'll also tell them to find me a Republican at West Asheville, and still no extra credit. So I think all of these things reinforce these divisions that were already there. Look, we used to talk about conservative Democrats and even to some degree liberal Republicans as late as the 1970s. That's not true anymore. We're perfectly sorted almost on party lines. If you're a liberal, you're a Democrat. If you're a conservative, you're a Republican. So it's hard to find commonality anymore, at least on the substantive issues.
It's hard not to be struck by what seems to be the further right swing of the Republican Party. I mean, 8 years ago, Mitt Romney was the standard bearer. George W. Bush was considered by progressives during his presidency to be on the far right. But here we are at the end of 2020, looking into 2021, and both of those men have been sort of staked out as critics of the president, of President Trump. They were among the first people to recognize Joe Biden's election. And that seems to be a distinct minority position now in the modern Republican Party.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. So when we talk about polarization or sectarianism or whatever you want to call it, I think we've got to remember that both parties have not polarized at the same speed. There is no doubt, if you look at the data, that the Republican Party has polarized quicker than the Democratic Party. And I think the breakdown in Democratic norms, again, small d, I don't mean Democratic Party, but the Democratic norms that we all used to subscribe to, have kind of gone by the wayside on the Republican Party, certainly with Trump's presidency. So I think you are right. I mean, if you look at somebody like Mitt Romney, who would have thought that this many, you know, not that many years later, we would be talking about Mitt Romney, the guy that talked about kind of gave that famous speech.
Right, the 47% or whatever.
47% speech that he's the one that the Democrats would be going, if only we had that guy in power. So I think you're right. And I think that shows that it's not just polarization, right? It's also about this loss of democratic norms. We're still having a conversation led by our president about the outcome of the election from over a month ago, that this is not normal and it's not okay.
Yeah, indeed, we've seen a large swath of the Republican members of Congress, particularly even from in North Carolina, sign on to this lawsuit that was tossed out by the Supreme Court from the state of Texas, really trying to overturn a presidential election in a way that not only has never happened, probably never even been tried before in the United States. And in recent weeks, we even had the spectacle of a North Carolina state lawmaker calling for Trump to declare martial law and simply declare the election void. It's something pretty much unprecedented.
It is unprecedented, right? And that one got picked up by the Washington Post and some other national media. It scares me, right? And I also think, it's worthwhile for us to remember, hey, Patrick McHenry, for example, did not sign on that. Here's somebody who's got some power in the institution and will continue on from the 10th Congressional District, did not sign on. So at the same time that I'm very, very disappointed and most of our Republican members of Congress, I think it's worth noting that it was not uniform and that folks like McHenry, who are going to still be in power, decided not to sign on.
Is Trump's connection unique? He seems to have this visceral connection with so many people on the political right in 2020 America. And one wonders whether it's something that can be replicated by anybody that's on the horizon. I mean, maybe Trump himself will be back on the horizon. Maybe he'll seek to be reelected in 2024. But one wonders whether there's really anybody out there, except maybe some other member of the Trump family, that could have this level of connection with voters.
I think it is unique. And look, we're headed in this direction. So I don't want to pretend that Trump created the world in which we're living in. He didn't. We were seeing increasing polarization prior to Trump. It's just that, you know, there was a fire burning and he didn't tamp it out. He actually added gas to it. And I think this kind of populist leader, this is what you see, right? So if you look back in American history and you think back on really some of the Democratic politicians in the South, a long time ago, folks like Huey Long, that is the last time we saw these kind of populist figures really gin up support about them more so than about their ideology. So I don't see anybody like Trump on the horizon. I mean, I think we're all trying to figure out what the future of the Republican Party looks like. My guess is it's folks like Tom Cotton, who are ideologically certainly very extreme, but less populist than a Trump.
I wonder what your take would be on North Carolina. You know, one of the, it seems to me, obvious trends that's taking place in American politics is we've seen how the coasts of the United States, both the East and West Coast, seem to be moving in a more progressive Democratic direction. We've seen how Virginia seems to have transitioned now to becoming a so-called blue state, and maybe even Georgia now is heading in that direction. One wonders, is this North Carolina's future? Are the demographics such that that's the direction we're trending? You know, I think a lot of people thought that might happen this election. It didn't happen this election. Yeah. But one wonders whether perhaps that is a pattern that is continuing to be replicated, and maybe that is where North Carolina's headed.
Yeah, you know, what I see for North Carolina, at least in the near term, is continued stability, continued purple, right? So if you look at, the 2020 election, we're still trying to figure out, you know, some of the exact numbers in specific places, but it looks like of all the states that Trump won, his margin was the closest in North Carolina of any of these states. So we talk about the difference between Georgia and North Carolina, but the reality is Georgia and North Carolina, in terms of vote totals, were incredibly close together, right? Georgia is the reddest blue state in the country. We're the bluest red state in the country. We're closer to Georgia than we are to any other state that voted for Donald Trump. So what I see going forward for us in North Carolina is continued purple, is the kinds of patterns that we've seen really since at least 2008, where we are going to continue to be a purple state and a swing state. I do not think we're going to move heavily into the Democratic direction or the Republican direction. And I think the scary irony, to return to the beginning of our conversation, is this kind of up for grabs, if you will, of North Carolina is what can lead to divisive politics. We know that if a party knows they aren't going to necessarily hold on to power very long in the future, that's when they hold on to it and they try to act as quick as they can. They're not so concerned with the consequences. Somewhere like Oklahoma, Republicans are going to control forever. They can take their time. California, the Democrats are going to do the same thing. But in a state like North Carolina, when you've got power, you've got to act.
We're talking with Professor Chris Cooper of Western Carolina University. Well, I suppose at least one group that will be happy about our divided politics are the TV station owners, who will continue to be flooded with millions of dollars in television ads in the future elections. 2022 is right around the corner. People are already staking out their claims, perhaps for the U.S. Senate seat. It looks like Senator Richard Burr is going to call it a career. And then, of course, we know that people are already positioning themselves for 2024 in the presidential race. And then, of course, here in North Carolina, we look to have a General Assembly and a relationship between the General Assembly and the governor, presumably, that continues to be divided. Look into your crystal ball. Any particular high-profile developments you see coming?
You know, I think all of those, obviously. Look, we're already talking about folks declaring for 2022 for the Senate run. I think, obviously, the future of Jeff Jackson is going to be tied pretty closely to the future of Democratic politics in our state. I am very curious to see if we can get any more policy action out of Raleigh. Everybody's talking about the number of vetoes that Cooper's had, which makes sense, right? He's a Democratic governor facing a Republican majority. Of course, he's going to veto a lot of bills, but I'm expecting to see more vetoes continue in the future. It's always worth remembering North Carolina was the last state in the country to give the veto power to the governor. And the guy who wrote the bill that eventually gave it to him, a guy named Roy Cooper when he was in the General Assembly. So Roy Cooper is actually able to wield the power that he ultimately gave himself a couple of decades ago. So I'm watching that. Obviously, we're all watching what happens with coronavirus relief in the short run. And then, obviously, the biggest question going into next year, I think, is about redistricting. We're going to get a new congressional seat. There's little doubt that that's going to happen. We're also going to see a redraw of our General Assembly lines again. And so what that process looks like, what the aftermath of that looks like, is going to decide a lot of the future of our state.
Well, we know, for one thing, you'll be paying close attention going forward. We sure do appreciate your insights. Please keep up the great work, and we'll check back later in 2021 and see how some of this stuff has turned out. Thanks so much. Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year. Always a pleasure to talk.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. Please wear your mask, stay safe as best you can, and I'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.